This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
Greetings. Welcome to Film Gazers, a podcast focusing on the science fiction, horror, fantasy trinity, and 20th century entertainment. I'm Steph.
I'm Jess. We're cousins / besties. Join us as we reminisce, discuss, and review films from our childhood.
Meowdy.
Meowdy.
So February has officially started. It's still so early in the year, and yet it feels like it's already been a lifetime.
I know. It does and it doesn't. I'm like, yeah. What month is it? I don't want spring to be here.
Yeah. Ugh, I know. And summer, and then it's going to be all gross and hot again. And
the winter just never lasts long enough here.
No, it doesn't. We are in Florida. We had that cold snap at my place of employment. A fire sprinkler pipe burst caused a slew of issues.
A slew of them.
Kind of ridiculous, too, because it literally snowed last year and yes. Nothing, like, exploded.
I don't think it got as cold, though, because it was, like, 19 degrees, I think, that one night.
Yeah, it was very cold. So, and then you're right there on the beach. So,
you got that wind, and the wind was like, we had like gusts of 30, 40 miles per hour.
Yes. And it was very cold.
My place of employment also, the pipes froze. They didn't burst, but we didn't have any water.
Because you have to wait. Exactly. Yeah. No, this one straight up burst. Like, and we were just renovating and all this stuff. It's a whole hassle. Like, it has been so stressful. So with that, what have you been watching and doing?
So I finished Cold Case Files.
Nice.
Don't remember the last episode, fell asleep through it and didn't bother to. I was like, from what I remembered, I'm good.
Like, it is done.
I'm good. It's done. Okay, I finished it. So then I was just perusing, like, oh, what series do I want to start next? And I was like, oh, yeah, Mom was watching The Following. And I was like, oh, I think I want to watch that one again, because I only watched the first season, I think, when it came out. And then I never watched any more of it. And I was like, damn, there are that many seasons?
Yeah, it got pretty far. Andrew and I watched it as it came out, we were watching it. And I think we watched the first two for sure. And then third might have been when we were starting to dip out, because it's a little hokey, but
it's more than a little hokey.
Yeah.
I'm surprised Kevin Bacon is in it. It's that hokey. Yes.
And even the bad guy, because he does a lot of stuff too.
He is so over the top.
He is. And every time I see him now and stuff, I'm like, oh my God, it's the guy from The Following. Like, I just remember him as the cult leader from The Following, because he was in that Altered Carbon that I really
exactly.
loved.
Yeah. And he was good in that one.
Yeah, he
like,
was.
He wasn't so like cheesy.
So I'm like, I feel like because it was television, I'm like, maybe they were just directed that way.
I'm sure they were directed that way. I'm sure of it, because like, it wasn't like an R-rated show. It was like network drama.
Exactly. Like, it had to have a little bit of that drama.
It had to have a little CW in there.
Yeah.
To keep the dummies at home interested.
You gotta have that good like scenes and cuts from the for the trailers that they're gonna air on commercials
exactly
like, the entire week,
and for like commercial break to keep you interested to come back.
Yes.
But I started season two, the first episode, and it was so ridiculous to me that they were wearing Joe Carroll masks.
Oh, I forgot about that.
First season, they were wearing Edgar Allan Poe masks, which is also so funny. Like, the whole idea of this cult is like Edgar Allan Poe, like obsession.
It's very like, I feel like, see, if I was a teenager, I would have loved it. You know what I mean? Yeah, like, it feels very much for like teenage sensibilities. Because like, when I was in high school, I was in creative writing and everything a lot. And I did like a whole, like, I think the requirement was literally like 10 pages. And I think I wrote like a 40-page short story about a girl who was escaping a cult and was being stalked by them and gets murdered at the end.
Like, you're like, this would have totally been on my level.
Yes, exactly. I was like, it's perfect. I would have loved this in high school.
So funny. My writing was more into children's stories.
I know.
And poetry. I was super into poetry.
I was also into poetry, but it was very sad poetry.
I feel like mine was more, I wanted it to be more like spoken poetry.
Oh, yeah. You're very like Def Jams.
More like berets and cigarettes.
Okay. See, I was the 90s, so I was thinking Def Jams.
I was thinking 90s more like, so I married an axe murderer.
Got you.
Harriet. Sweet Harriet. Harriet.
I thought I loved you, but I can't remember.
Like, thought that you were cuckoo, but it, oh, it was right there. That's funny.
I know.
I loved that fucking movie.
I know that might be one we should do later.
Totally. But anyway, so I finished Cold Case Files and watched The Following, and that's actually pretty much it because I've been just busy.
Yeah. And you still have some family recovering from some surgeries and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure you got a full plate with work on top of it all.
Yeah. So I've been working and then trying to take care of my household. And then, you know, mom can't drive. So I have to do whatever she needs done.
Yeah. Doing a lot of errands.
A lot of running errands.
I got to run to town.
I'm like, is that something that's said everywhere in America, running errands?
I don't know.
Gotta go to town today.
Yeah, I was like, we would say like, oh, I gotta go into town, like that. Mm-hmm. When we
said that growing up a lot. I don't really say that anymore because
I'm in town. Yeah,
the town grew up around me.
Yeah, we went back and we watched Scary Movie 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm. I watched all of them 1 year.
Yeah, I hadn't watched them in a little while, and I was like, oh, I always remember like watching 2 a lot, like at home and stuff, like on, like I'm sure we had it on DVD or VHS, and I remember watching it. Yes, exactly. Like, and you know, he was so funny, Chris Elliott. And then rewatching them, and Andrew and I were talking because we're like, oh, I think 2 was always like maybe the one we liked more, but mm-hmm. we had just watched 1, and I was like, oh, 1 was pretty funny. Like, it still was ridiculous, but
the baby dick thing was.
Yeah, so 1 does hold up more than 2. 2 was still funny in parts, but they ended up spoofing like everything. Scary Movie still spoofed like, I think a little bit of the like Matrix or like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, but it still kind of stayed on scary movies, you know?
Oh, yeah,
and,
right.
And 2 was way more, just way more of everything. They're making fun of like the Nike commercials and, you know, like a whole bunch of random stuff that was just pop culture during that time, to where even if young people now watched it, they would probably have
none of it.
Yeah, they'd have to look up a lot of the references if it wasn't directly, you know, doing one of the horror movies. So it was just funny. It was a little more cringy, like a little more cheesy, I guess. Like, mm-hmm. and the first one wasn't as like, it was in a good way.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, I could see where this was going, but it was crazy to think about. Cause I'm like, oh my God, I saw this in theater.
That guy's sucking his own dick.
Twelve. So that was really funny. So I also watched Fast 5, still slowly going through the Fast and Furious series.
Still trucking through.
Yeah, they're just, I mean, they're bad, but At this point in the fifth one, I'm like, just like, oh, what's he gonna do? Oh, Dom, what are you doing? But, and they're also just like caricatures of themselves by five. Like, there's literally, I felt like there was no like actual dialogue throughout the film. It was just kind of one liners,
catchphrases.
And yeah, like there was just nothing substantial. I'm like, okay, these are just supposed to be like car action movies. Like,
yeah, these are just to watch cars and like hear some music.
And that's cool. That's fine. I keep thinking it's going to have like a more interesting plot in each film, and it never gets
right.
That
you're like, and we never get it.
Never.
Never gonna get it. Never gonna get it.
And then we also watched this other one that came out as a newer one called It Ends.
Oh, okay. I think I've saw that somewhere, but I haven't seen it.
Highly recommend it. Was a lot of fun. It's very Gen Z. Like, I don't know another way to describe it. Yeah, it's about kind of like a liminal space. So they end up like turning off on this road. You know, they're like trying to go somewhere like a road trip or something. And it is, what is it, three people or four people? Yeah, four people in the car. And they're supposed to be younger, getting together. They take this wrong turn, kind of, essentially, and the road just keeps going and going and going. Like, they've been driving for hours and they're like, like the turn should have been shown up some by now, you know. And then they start kind of getting weirded out, and then like literally they drive the entire night, like, you know, like the sun is like, and they're like, how do we still have gas? Like, you know, like things are starting to get weird. And then they kind of figure out they're in this liminal road, and it just keeps going, and like it's just how they're handling it. I don't want to ruin it, because it is, like I said, this is way more of a newer one, so I don't want to spoil anything more than that. But it was really good.
That's interesting.
And it had a lot of humor in it, like the way it was written in certain aspects. It was done well. And the overall plot, I thought for being what it is, and then the setting obviously is limited, because you're like on a liminal kind of thing that's just over and over.
Liminal.
But
limited.
Limited. And then to break it up a little bit with something a little more lighthearted, I did a Jane Austen book club. It was a movie that came out in, I think it was more of the like early 2000s, maybe mid, like the teens kind of area. And it's like this group of women. And of course, they're at different personality stages of their life, etc. And they start like a Jane Austen book club because one friend's going through like a divorce, you know, possibly. And one guy is like, conveniently got added in, and he's like this young dude, so there's a little bit of a love interest thing between him and one of the members, and then the other girls with the story. Emily Blunt is in it, and I did not like her storyline, because it's like her almost having interest in her high school student because she's a teacher.
Ew.
And to where I was like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
So she doesn't, just to clarify though, like the character never does anything. Like, she basically is getting to that point, and then she's like, what the fuck am I doing? You know? So thank God, but still everything even in between then is still just so inappropriate.
You're like, I can't.
You just hate her character. And then there's a few other characters as well. Like, so it was fine. It was, like I said, a good little palate cleanser, considering everything else I'd kind of been watching. And I've been doing a lot of horror and kind of darker things. Still watching The Expanse as well. I think we're on the second to last season, and it's so far so good. Amos, one of my favorite characters, is like on Earth, and some shit's going down, and everything does feel like it's like kind of building to a head. So I'm excited to see where they go with it. Again, I can't stop recommending the show to you. I really think you need to start it when you're in the sci-fi mood.
Mm-hmm. I will.
Yeah. And then, and then I've just been also watching RuPaul's Drag Race. I did season 13, and now I'm on 14. Going well. I have to say, like, I feel like people don't lip sync like they used to. Like, I am not seeing hardly any death drops. Like, I feel like they just don't quite have the spirit.
Yeah. You're like, where's the charisma, uniqueness, nerve and talent?
Just not all of them, but just some of, I'm like, what is this? I'm like, man, they used to like go so hard. Like, each lip sync was like just its own like giant performance by some of these like queens. And then like later, they're just kind of like I don't know. I'm like, this is what we did in your room when you're like a little kid, like better. Or even the like costume things, like even with their clothing, you know, like it doesn't even have to be their dance because not everyone can dance. I get that. But there was plenty of queens in the past who still did great lip syncs with like other methods, you know, and like by their awesome costume change or, you know, where it turns like they're not doing none of that anymore. Like only a few even do like a double wig. Like I'm like, I need a surprise wig.
Exactly. Unless you wearing three wigs to that lip sync.
But I feel like 14 like started coming back a little bit. So yeah. I feel like
I think that was the lackluster season because there are some seasons where you're like, like nobody stands out this season, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm getting through it though. They're still fun. I like them regardless.
That is also one of my comfort shows. Like I can just, it always makes me feel better when I watch it.
Yes. And I'm still reading Hatchet and Dracula is on audiobook. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so just doing the thing, getting through, working, and watching what I can.
I took a pause on my audiobooks because of my sensory overload lately.
Oh, yeah.
That when I drive, I need total silence.
Yeah, so that is your quiet time.
That's my quiet time.
I get that. All right, guys. So that's what we've been up to. And our February theme is la, 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 tragic romance. Today, we're going to give you Brokeback Mountain, and we'll finish the month out with City of Angels. Angels.
City of Angels. Bring me a angel.
All like this, the arms of an angel.
Far away.
And we have been discussing March. We will announce it officially on that City of Angels episode. We're just making sure we can line everything up how we want it lined up.
Yes.
So that's a little TBA.
TBD.
So in this episode, we watched 2005's Brokeback Mountain. It was directed by Ang Lee. The screenplay was by Larry McMurdy. There we go.
McMurdy?
It's McMurdy. The MCM, like when I'm looking at it, my brain was like, I don't know how to say that. Diana Ossana, also screenplay. It was based on Brokeback Mountain by Annie Proulx. It was produced by Diana Ossana and James Seamus. It was starring Heath Ledger, Jake Gyllenhaal, Anne Hathaway, Michelle Williams, Linda Cardellini, Anna Faris, Randy Quaid. Randy Quaid being in this was just not what I anticipated.
I did not know he was in this. And he looked like a little dumpling.
He did. The cinematography was by Rodrigo Prieto. It was edited by Geraldine Peroni and Dylan Teichner. Music by Gustavo Santaolalla. Production companies were Focus Features and River Road Entertainment. It was released December 9th, 2005. Running time, 134 minutes. The budget, $14 million. The box office, $179 million. So it did pretty dang well, I'd say, with that ratio. So it was based on a short story titled Brokeback Mountain that first appeared in the October 13th, 1997 edition of The New Yorker by author Annie Proulx. It later was included in a series of collection of her short stories in 1999 called Close Range Wyoming Stories. So it was like a whole series she did just about the state, basically, and had different short stories. Yeah. So it was primarily filmed in the Canadian Rockies of Alberta, Canada. Like basically nothing was filmed in Wyoming. I was like, okay, that's kind of, sometimes that's like makes me mad about, especially
like,
knowing
it's close enough,
especially knowing like the short story is kind of like they were all supposed to be about the state. And then that like like none of that. Like that was supposed to be a big there. Forefront of like the story. And they're like, eh. It was beautiful though.
Oh yeah. That was the best part of the movie.
This is just a random fun fact. When they were shooting, there was real sheep, you know, that they were working with and stuff. I had no idea about this, but apparently sheep do not drink from running water sources. They only drink from ponds and lakes. So they had to spend like a whole day trying to get sheep to drink from a stream, because that was, I think, that all they had access to or whatever. And then they don't. So it was like a whole thing. And like, apparently it was just very difficult shooting with all the sheep for some of that reason, where I was like, that is so weird. Why don't they drink from running water?
Maybe they know it's unsafe.
I don't know. So yeah, I'm going to have to like go into a deep dive about that later. I was just like, that's a strange fun fact. And I'm putting that in there.
You're like, and did the sheep have access to water sources then? I know. The sheep keeling over from dehydration?
No, they made sure, but that was the whole thing, was they were having to focus on making sure the sheep were getting proper care and they weren't able to film because they obviously did not think it through.
Like, who knew sheep didn't drink from running water?
I know.
You're like, how do you not get sick all the time drinking from a pond?
It's the way they're made, I guess. They're
like, have a lot of parasites.
Yeah, they're like, we got tummy enzymes for that. So during the casting process, Anne Hathaway, she was being considered for the role of Alma, but she found herself drawn to Lorene instead. And so she was actually filming Princess Diaries 2, like when she needed to audition. So she was basically still in her like hair and makeup from Princess Diaries when she was auditioning for this role. I saw an article that kind of quoted her saying like, she was able to change into like she put like a flannel shirt on, but she's like, I figured the crown and the big giant hair was pretty country Western, you know?
That's funny.
And so she obviously got the part. And then Ang Lee told Out Magazine that auditioning actors to play the male leads had actually proved unusual to other films that he's cast. He said, during the interviews, I had a feeling they were a little, if I may say, afraid and uncomfortable. Usually when they come to meet with the director, their agents will always follow up with like, how's it going? He was like, none of them did that to me this time. One of the producers, Osana, said some actors were discouraged even from auditioning. The co-writer believed that a lot of the actors' representatives were dissuading a lot of them from doing the parts because they were calling it career suicide for a straight actor to play a gay person. And he's quoted as saying, we thought that was ridiculous. So
that's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, there was still a lot. Apparently, when I'm reading a lot about this, especially just how the gay community was seen at the time, you know, this is the early 2000s, things were starting to take a turn. Like we were having more media, because I believe they said like Trans America had come out a little around that time. There were already a few others, you know, like where it was, you know, a little just more on the forefront, you know, and people are getting a little more accepting and everything. But then obviously then there's the pushback from the homophobic crowd. And then, like I said, there was also people who were just concerned about proper representation, which we see a lot now, you know, which was like they said, it was more of that they were straight playing a gay person. That's what some people had a problem with. So there was just a lot going on, you know, like with the opinions, like everyone had a lot of opinions. But in the end, you know, it was Ledger and Gyllenhaal, and they were nominated even for Oscars for their performances. But some of the other people that they had maybe considered or thought about, I don't know how far any of these people got in the process. They could have just been asked, and who knows, maybe their agent, you know, pushed them against it or something. Mm-hmm. Or some of them could have auditioned. I'm not sure, didn't specify, but it was Matt Damon, Ben Affleck, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Josh Hartnett, Billy Crudup, and then Colin Farrell. Those were just some of the, which I'm like, man, these would have all been like, I feel like completely different movies, definitely depending. And apparently the men were also like paired together. So they already had in mind like who, like pairs, like basically them in pairs. So
can you imagine Matt Damon and Ben Affleck together?
Yes. Like that was the one where I was like, man, that would have been, I can't take Ben Affleck seriously sometimes. It's so hard for me to take him as a serious
and actor. He would have been the Jack character, right?
I would think so. I would imagine so. I mean, I feel like Ben Affleck is the bottom.
Yeah, that's what I know. That's what I was getting at.
And even there was Josh Hartnett was stated saying this is unsubstantiated, so you know, take this with a grain of salt, but I saw something that said Josh Hartnett said that like he wishes he did not turn it down or like something like that. I don't know if he was actually offered, if he signed up the role itself or even just the audition, you know, I don't know, but apparently he said he would have been doing it with Joaquin Phoenix. And that would have been interesting.
Yeah.
But Joaquin Phoenix has like a quote saying that like, he was like, no, I would have remembered had I been offered one of those roles. Cause he's like, I definitely would have took it. Cause you know, he's never been afraid of like just doing roles. Yeah. That he wants to do. So he wouldn't have been afraid of, I think, any like, oh, I can't be a gay guy or, oh, people hate gay people, you know, like Joaquin wouldn't have given two shits probably, but yeah. So I don't know how true that is, but Heath Ledger, if people are big fans of him, I'm sure they already know this about him, but he had grown up on farms in Western Australia. And so he barely needed any training for the film whatsoever. They said he literally had all the skills that he needed to make the movie. Lee is quoted to say he was a natural. He was so good with animals too. When he sat on that horse, there was no doubt in anyone's mind that he was a cowboy. And then they said Gyllenhaal, on the other hand, needed way more training. So Ang Lee also was bringing Ledger into his process in a way that he usually doesn't and actually dislikes doing with performers, which is allowing Ledger to like watch the takes like after each one and go to the camera monitors like with the director and watching it. Apparently Ang Lee never really liked to do that in a lot of his films. Mm-hmm. And he was like, and he said some of them, most of them a lot of times don't even want to watch it. And he was like, so that's why I don't like actors to do it. He was like, a lot of them will get like almost too self-conscious when they start watching themselves too much.
I can see that.
Yeah. He said, but with Ledger, that he would watch it and then his next take would literally be better than the last. So he says he was like, he's the only person that I ever worked with that actually did that. He's like, usually they get worse with each watch. Mm-hmm. And then apparently Ledger acts almost like broke Gyllenhaal's nose in one of the like throes of passion scene. Gyllenhaal described, and I quote, he grabs me and he slams me up against the wall and kisses me, and then I grab him and I slam him up against the wall and I kiss him, and we were doing that take after take after take. I got the shit beat out of me. Which I have to say, where I'm like, yeah, some of the scenes came off a little rapey. I'm going to already say it. Like, it was a little like almost, I don't know. I was like, and then I was like, okay. I was like, okay, he's into it. But like the very first one, I was like, he's kind of pushing you away, dude. You're kind of, is this consent? Okay. So the movie was nominated for Best Picture at the Academy Awards. And then it also won, though, for Best Director, Best Adapted Screenplay, and Original Score. But it was still quite a shock that it lost Best Picture. And it lost to the movie Crash. Do you remember that one?
That was the one with the baby crawling on the ceiling?
No, that was Trainspotting.
Oh, okay. What was Crash?
I think I only watched it once, and not even when it came out. It was like supposed to be like a couple of different stories and how they're intertwined, and there's like some car accident. And even when I was reading about Brokeback, and there was a lot of articles too about how people are pissed that Crash won Best Picture that year and not Brokeback, because Crash was like way more heavy-handed and like just kind of preachy almost. Like people are just saying like it just wasn't as good. And it's one of those like notable like, oh, the Academy fucked up that year kind of moments.
And they're probably like, we can't make a gay movie the best picture. Well,
and that's what it was too, was a lot of people think that was part of the reason, was some homophobia still rampant. And Jack Nicholson was the one who announced that year. And they said that he looked visibly shocked when it wasn't Brokeback Mountain. And he was quoted later that night when talking to someone that he thought it Brokeback was going to win. And that was the film that he personally voted for. Yeah. So who knows, but that was who knows, but they fucked up. Cause I remember Crash not. Yeah. I remember when I finally watched it, I'm like, this one best picture that year. Ew.
I just looked it up and I was like, I have no recollection of that movie at all.
I feel like I didn't even fully finish it. Like that's how like uninterested I kind of became with it.
Mm-hmm.
And 2005 was the year I was done with school. I had a lot going on that year. So that also kind of explains to me now why I didn't see a lot of these movies that came out at that specific time for sure. Because I was a busy little bee. Because I'm like, yeah, I didn't watch Crash till years and years later. And then I was disappointed I had.
Yeah, in 2005, that was... I had already graduated cosmetology school. And I was probably living in a shithole trailer and working my first job as a hairstylist.
Nice.
So I didn't have cable. I didn't have money to go to the movies. Mm-hmm. I watched a lot of wrestling and Maury Povich.
I feel like I was living that trailer park life.
I know. I totally was. Yep.
So the author of the short story, Annie Prohl. So I have a couple of things. I wanted to bring up the short story too. If it's based on a book, we try to implement that. So she's quoted as saying how different readers take the story is a reflection of their own personal values, attitudes, or hangups. And this is referring to like how people are interpreting if they're bisexual or gay or, you know, is... Someone from New York's Gay City News wrote that Ennis and Jack's experiences were metaphors for many men who do not identify as gay or even queer, but who nevertheless have sex with other men. Or it's like basically like closeted or down low, you know, straight men. But again, the author wants that to kind of you interpret it how you want to interpret it. And Entertainment Weekly was quoted that everyone called it just the gay cowboy movie until they actually saw it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm using that because that we're going to definitely refer back to this when we start talking, getting into it more. This was something else I thought that was a funny antidote that I'm going to say that the author obviously is not much of a fan of fan fiction. I found this interview she did and I wanted to read this whole excerpt because it was, again, a fun fact. So I found this interview that was in the Wall Street Journal that was with the author regarding just this movie and a lot of her work in general. It was a good article. I found a bunch of good articles, honestly, about this. So I do suggest if you like this movie or if you were like us and didn't know much about it and you're going to watch it and get into it, definitely read all the Google shit you can find because there was a lot. And this particular question I just thought was funny because obviously she was not a big fan of the fan fiction people were doing regarding the story. So the question was, what effect did the success of Brokeback Mountain have on your writing life, if any? And her response is, Brokeback Mountain has had little effect on my writing life, but is the source of constant irritation in my private life. There are countless people out there who think the story is open range to explore their fantasies and to correct what they see as an unbearably disappointing story. They constantly send ghastly manuscripts and pornish rewrites of the story to me, expecting me to reply with praise and applause for fixing the story. They certainly don't get the message that if you can't fix it, you've got to stand it. Most of these fix-it tales have the character Ennis finding a husky boyfriend and living happily ever after. Or discovering that the character Jack is not really dead. or having the two men's children meet and marry, et cetera, et cetera. Nearly all of these remedial writers are men, and most of them begin with, I'm not gay, but... They do not understand the original story. They know nothing of copyright infringement, and that the characters Jack Twist and Innes Del Mar are my intellectual property. And beneath every mangled rewrite is the unspoken assumption that because they are men, they can write this story better than a woman can. They have not a clue that the original Brokeback Mountain was part of a collection of stories about Wyoming and exploring the myths and landscapes of that state. The general impression I get is that they are bouncing off of the film and not the story. And she was like, but and there's more, but that's enough. Okay. She's just like done. She's like basically like, yeah, like she's like, you're getting hung up on the movie. Like, I don't want to know about, like, I wrote my story. It is what it is. Like,
you know. She's like, you have a problem with this? You take it up with that director.
Because I think her still didn't have a happy ending either, you know, but she's just
no,
like,
Jack that... still died in her story.
Yeah. So she's like, I don't care what you wanted from it. This, like she said, And that literally, and they did also have that in the movie. And so I'm like, that was a big message, was that if you can't fix it, you've got to stand it. Like, I feel mm-hmm. like that is a very, like, I don't know, I guess cowboy or Western, whatever you want to say, yeah. kind of, you know, outlook about something. But that was directly from, it was called Return to the Range. Annie Proulx goes back to Wyoming for her new short story collection by Robert J. Hughes. That's specific, because that was a long one, I know. But I just thought she's like, not about fan fiction. And then she even went, was like, this is my intellectual property. Like, she is like, no, I don't want any of you writing any fanfic about my shit. Okay.
She's like, and especially don't send it to me.
I know. Especially because you know how much of it had to have been like smut. Like,
oh, you know it was.
And I saw a photo of her, and she looks exactly like how I expected her to look, and like that she just takes no bullshit. Like, she looks like that kind of lady, you know. I found a lot of the other facts and everything from cinemablend.com. There was a good article that someone had wrote named Philip Sledge, and he had never watched it either. And he's literally the same age as like me. He was like 17 in 2005, but he's a straight guy. And he watched it for the first time after 20 years. And it was about why he was glad he did. Cause, like, you know, as a 17-year-old boy, like how his outlook would have been a little different at the time. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to mention that. Cause, like I said, we'll be kind of circling back to some of what I've mentioned here. So with that, Jess is going to take it away with the Yagogod Samra.
In 1963, rodeo cowboy Jack Twist and ranch hand Innes Del Mar are hired by rancher Joe Aguirre as sheep herders in Wyoming. One night on Brokeback Mountain, Jack makes a drunken pass at Innes that is eventually reciprocated, if you know what I mean. Though Innes marries his longtime sweetheart and Jack marries a fellow rodeo rider, the two men keep up their tortured and sporadic affair over the course of 20 years.
So neither of one had actual memories of this film. So we're going to go with the tried and true. What were your expectations?
First off, I thought it was modern day. I had no idea it was like a 1960s. That's when it was like, you know, took place. I had no idea about that.
That's so funny because I'm in the camp of, I thought it was supposed to be before the 1960s. So it was more modern than I anticipated.
I thought it was supposed to be in the 2000s, and they were just like cowboys. I thought they just had like one love affair and then that was it, I guess. I didn't realize that it was going to be like 20 years.
Yes. Also, was not expecting the time jumping. I thought it was literally going to be like a really tender tale about these two men's time on this mountain, like for the whole movie, just about. Like I thought, oh, maybe towards the end, because I knew Michelle Williams was in it. I did not even know Anne Hathaway was in it.
I had no idea about her either, mm-hmm. or Randy Quaid.
Yeah, and I only knew why Michelle Williams was in it was because I knew that, I didn't mention the facts, but this is how her and Heath Ledger met. And she ended up, you know, they had their child together and everything. I think even before the movie premiered, kind of, it was apparently he like fell in love with her almost immediately. So that was the only reason why I knew she was in this movie.
Mm-hmm. I knew it. And there was like one trailer that had her in it that I saw. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I never saw Anne Hathaway in any trailers.
No, I did not remember her. It was so funny seeing Anna Faris pop up too. Was not expecting that.
Oh yeah. Who was she in that?
She was just supposed to be the random wife of Hopper.
Yes, yes, yes.
Who was
making a passage.
Yeah, because we know they hook up later, I guess. But yes, I thought this was, for me, I thought it was going to be an early 1900s. Like, I thought it was like cowboy. And I'm like, yeah, they're fucking sheep herders. Like, they're not even like those kind of cowboys, like that I was thinking. And yeah, so I thought it was going to be early 1900s. Like, yeah, a very tender, torrid romance that they had in this mountains. And I really genuinely thought the tragic part was going to be that, like, you know, they had to go their separate ways because it was the early 1900s. And they're like, oh, we can't possibly, be like out cowboys.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of where I was anticipating all of this to go. And it was not. And that is why I had that quote where they're like, oh, everybody thought it was a gay cowboy movie until they saw it. And I'm like, yes, that is
accurate.
And it's so funny you thought it was more modern and I thought it was more old.
More, yeah. Because I just thought they were like, you know, how they have modern cowboys out in Wyoming, mm-hmm. doing stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Like ranchers. Like, I just thought they were ranchers. And that they were ranching on the side and going home to their wives at night. And it was kind of like the story of how they fell in love while they were ranching.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no.
But I didn't think it was going to be over 20 years. I thought it was just going to be the story of how they fell in love and then how they like told their wives or whatever.
Yeah, something along that nature. I was even going to say like, oh, okay, maybe that was going to happen. But even then I thought, again, the tragic part was that they just were never going to be together the end. Well, yeah, I mean, like at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was not what I was expecting at all. So with that, let's just get into it. My first note is no idea it was 1963. Assumed it was the early 1900s.
I said exactly. Didn't realize it was 1963.
So it has a very kind of slow beginning. None of them even speak.
Mm-hmm.
And very far into the intro, it's kind of just Mr. Randy Quaid. He is like the big guy or whatever who actually owns the sheep. And you have Heath Ledger had like waltzed up to it and he's just waiting outside of the office. And Jake Gyllenhaal's character rolls up in his truck, a very older model looking truck. And he is like immediately, I fucking Heath Ledger. And then they all go into the little workman trailer or whatever. And I just put like, I was like, literally no one can say fucking good morning. Like,
nope. I was like, I thought they were supposed to be like a little bit more. Well, that's supposed to be Wyoming. I don't know how their manners are out there.
Yeah.
It's not Texas.
Yeah. It's not. And not the Southeast. I don't know how the country folk, especially in the 60s, who knows? I don't know. They all seemed like assholes in that area a little bit.
Yeah, they did.
And then the guy just gives a breakdown and then he's like, okay, you start. And I'm like, they're just giving jobs without literally saying any words.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just here you go.
Well, I got the impression that he knew at least Jack.
Yes. Like you do kind of find that out later, but Heath Ledger hadn't worked for him before. So right. I just thought that was funny.
Yes. He knew he was a rancher.
Yeah. And in the beginning, so they go out there and the whole thing too is I don't think if I understood, or maybe I just didn't care to understand, like what they were supposed to be doing apparently was illegal. Like they weren't allowed to be camping with the sheep.
I don't think they're supposed to have their sheep grazing there anyway, because it was like a forestry
mm-hmm.
thing. And I don't think you're supposed to, I don't know.
Okay. Yeah. Cause they're like, oh, you can't have your fire going at night or whatever.
Yeah. Cause you're not supposed to be there.
Yeah. So basically it's like they have the camp where I guess they're allowed to have a camp, but yeah, I guess they're not supposed to leave the sheep out there or something, but they do. And so someone has to go sleep in the little tent, like the pitch tent, pup tent or right. something, whatever they call it.
Where the sheep are.
And that's the job.
So, maybe it's just illegal to camp in that area or something.
Maybe. Yeah. They explain it, but I was just like, I don't know. I don't need to know about the logistics.
Yeah. I don't need to know the legalities of the situation.
So they kind of show in the beginning that like Heath Ledger is more of the real deal in terms of like skill set and mm-hmm. capability. Cause Jake Gyllenhaal is like, talking about, he's like, oh, I don't get thrown off horses and this and that, but like he clearly has gotten thrown off it before and like
right.
some other stuff. And he was the one going out, and then Heath was the one staying like at the camp and being the cook and everything and basically right. running for that. They immediately also show the juxtaposition of their characters a little bit. Like you can almost tell that it is kind of like an opposites attract situation a little, because Jake Gyllenhaal's character is always like, you know, oh, he has no right to ask me to do this and no right to mm-hmm. ask me to do that and blah blah blah, and I'm like, you came for the job, like,
yeah,
that you know is already shady, like no one's forcing you to do it. And then he even says, like, you know, he could, oh, he just doesn't like working for his dad or whatever.
Mm-hmm. He's just a bunch of talk.
Yes, Gisto. Exactly. And then Heath Ledger is like more of the strong, silent type.
Yes. He just does the work.
Yes. And it was like, I should have wrote it down. I didn't. But I think it was at the 18 minute mark or maybe 28. Either way, it was fairly earlier in the film where we get to that tent scene.
And what's crazy to me, I felt like it came out of nowhere. I didn't feel like they had that kind of vibe going on yet.
Yes. Yeah. I did feel like that, because they were like it was like they were just starting to get along, because Heath Ledger was kind of just a dick. Like I said, Jake Gyllenhaal definitely seemed like he was interested first, in my opinion, just when he's first looking at him before they meet up with Randy Quaid or whatever. So mm-hmm. I did get the feeling it was from him. And I believe he's the one who kind of makes the move anyway, but I just don't know how he got anything from Heath Ledger. Yeah. Cause I feel like his character in this wasn't necessarily putting that out yet. He was like, yeah. I feel like he was just starting to get comfortable with him, just like as a person, maybe. I wasn't sure if I felt that he was like romantically interested, like it's like Jake Gyllenhaal's character seemed to be already. Mm-hmm. And that's why I said it came off as a little, you know, like pushy at first. And I was like, yeah. Oh, because that really kind of took me aback, because I was like, oh, this isn't what I was expecting. You know, right. like it, I don't know. It came off kind of hetero.
Did you know he wanted to be the bottom?
I mean, I think so. Yeah. Because I did say, I was like, it makes sense that Jake Gyllenhaal is the bottom.
Yeah. I mean, it made sense, but I don't know. It didn't feel very lovey-dovey is what I'm saying. That
scene. Yeah. 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 No, it did not. And then the next morning when it was, I ain't queer. Me neither. Yeah. You know? And so this is where I'm going to kind of refer back to the article I mentioned where the guy, you know, says that, oh, he's glad he waited till he was older when he watched it. Mm-hmm. And I think from a straight male perspective, that probably might be more true for most of them, because of the, you know, like I said, home in 2005, people were still being like, you know, calling things gay and like, yeah. like, right. you know, certain things, like, especially like within their spheres, probably. But I feel like if I would have watched this in 2005, I probably would have been more like sympathetic, like to Heath Ledger's character, maybe. Mm-hmm. But in 2026, I don't know if this is a hot take or a bad take or what, but this is literally how I felt from like after they leave the mountain and you're getting to know Ennis more as a person, all I saw was he's just the guy who becomes like the Republican guy later. You know what I mean?
Because he's so repressed.
He's the repressed, like extremely repressed, the guy who's projecting and everything and voting against these things and voting to harm these people and living this life because he just cannot admit something about himself. Mm-hmm. But then on the other hand, as the movie progresses a little more, and then you also find out about the hate crime that he witnessed.
Right. So he's traumatized from that.
Yeah. So it's like, so the movie did have layers to it. You know, at least I would give it that because like, and yeah, in the beginning, before you kind of find out about that and like how he treats like Alma after a while. And mm-hmm. like, you can clearly tell he's an alcoholic, you know, they make that very like pronounced as well. Like when they show him anytime in his own personal life, there's just always beer bottles around him. Like he's always drinking. So I don't like him. I do not like Ennis Del Mar as a person. I think he is a piece of shit. Like,
well, and to be fair, like his life was never as good as Jack's either.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's true.
I feel like it kind of highlighted how his fear, really, it was like all about his fear consuming him. Like,
he was
so afraid that he couldn't even enjoy anything.
No, he could not live any remote part of his life. Because that's even the difference of Jake Gyllenhaal's character. He is more accepts like who he is, whether he's a bisexual man or a gay man, you know, like, but he still was like, they show him and he's not mean to his wife, you know what
He even
like,
stands up for his wife to her father.
Yeah. And
I love that scene.
Yeah, that was a good scene. And that was kind of showing Jake Gyllenhaal's character, like really finally coming into his own. And growing, you know, and Ennis is stagnant. Like he just stays in his fear and festers in it. And I mean, and he has daughters, you know, that he does love and care for and everything. Like, but he's just such a miserable fucking person. Mm-hmm. And there comes to a while where, like I said, I understand they gave it layers with his backstory, but it's almost so frustrating to watch, you know, too, because you're like, you just gotta, there's an acceptance you have to go through and a healing. And like, again, people would probably be like, oh, you're such a piece of shit. Like he saw someone, you know, murdered and blah, blah, blah when he's like 9 years old. And I'm like, I get that. I'm not trying to be like, get over it.
Yeah, right.
Like to an extent, but he's just such a, it's a frustrating character to watch. Cause then, like I said, I lose all sympathy though, because then he starts acting out like the people that he's afraid of, you know, right. And that's the issue is like, now it's just pure projection at this point, you know, like every time that he like gets all worked up about it and he's like upset that he's like, oh, I like men, or at least Jake Gyllenhaal, whether that be the case or not. But like, then he like has always tried to go pick fights with other men. Like, and then, which to me explains also kind of like that initial tent scene, you know, is like, he almost can't even be tender and the way he wants to be with a man, because that's just not, you know what, like he's, again, he's just behaving exactly like how the men he's imagining that are gonna kill him. Like,
yeah, and then they don't even kill him, they kill I even looked that up because I wanted to see if
I heard that was ambiguous.
Yeah. And even it said in the story, it said the same thing. Like, yes, that's what she told him. And then he said, nope, it was a tire iron. Like, that's how they got him. But that was him thinking that while he was being told that.
Exactly. Yeah. Because he's so scared. And it's like,
and you don't know how he really died.
And it's true, because too, like, you know, she's supposed to be a well-connected person and her father did hate him. So like, but did he know that? Because it almost seems like, too, their relationship, it'll show them talking a little bit about their personal lives, but they're not going super into it. And, I mean, we know Jake Gyllenhaal even purposely leaves out information, you know, about some of the guys that he's been hooking up with.
Mm-hmm.
And doesn't even reveal that until way later as well. Like, because, again, you get, yeah, such these big time hops, too. Yeah, sorry, but I went on that tangent of, like, how I hated Ennis's character.
Yeah.
Like, and I said, when I was younger, I would have definitely had more sympathy and, you know, really had that kind of like empathy for him in that part. But with everything and today's climate and stuff, I'm like, fuck Ennis. Like,
I had more empathy for Jack.
I did too. Yeah, I absolutely did too.
Because I just felt like he was a better person. He took better care of his family.
Yes, exactly. He did. And he genuinely just cared, you know, like about people other than himself. Mm-hmm. Like that's the thing at the end of the day too, is Ennis was just more worried about himself, about his own, you know, well-being, but basically over, you know, his children, his wife, like everybody. Like all he wants to do is go off to work and be gone for months or days at a time. And he misses a lot of his family functions, doesn't spend time with them, but then he's barely providing. Like he's poor all the time. So it's
right.
I don't know. It's like, you're not trying. Like there has to be a point where you have to just
commit to something. You got to commit to one life or the other. You can't be half in and half out.
Exactly. And then that's supposed to be because they have a conversation later after the years when Jake Gyllenhaal's like, I can't just meet, like, it's not enough for me to meet up like once or twice a year and fuck. Like, yeah. That's not what he's there for, you know? Ennis opens up at times, you know, saying like, I wish this never happened or, you know, like, and we have the whole, I can't quit you stuff, like, mm-hmm. you know, the big lines, but ultimately he just can't commit to like anyone. And even Linda Cardellini's character, you know, like he's going to go and lead on another woman, you know, that like, mm-hmm. he knows he has no interest in, like, let's get real. Cause even the scenes with Alma later, cause he knocks up Alma twice, like real fucking quick. And then she's still having to work. Like, so he's not a provider. Like, right. Again, he's these scuff fucking like GOP guys now who are like, I'm a provider, but no, they still need their girlfriend or wife to work. And then they still want to live by these rules. And then it's because they secretly like hate themselves and they hate women. Just be gay. It's okay.
Exactly. It is okay. And especially, okay, I get this is 1963, but they could have done what Jack wanted and go and lived on his parents' property.
Yes. And then the even
ranch going, what was wrong with that?
And when he meets the parents, and then even the dad, while he was like, oh, you know, he ain't worth a damn sometimes, but I still felt like the dad was like kind of okay with it.
I didn't feel like he acted like he hated his son and he still wanted him buried in the family plot.
Yeah, but I'm like, is that because he wanted to be against the son's wishes? Or is that because he just, yeah, he's like, no, he's my son and I love him. And but then because he was like, oh, you know, he was going to talk about you coming up here and helping. But then he found another fella. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that's what I just love that. That's why I kind of felt like maybe the dad was okay with it. And then was also like, oh, asshole, like you kept letting my son down and he moved on. You know, yeah. Like I was like, is that what he's saying?
Well, that's kind of what I felt like, is that he was like, he's mine, not yours. You know?
Yeah.
Like,
I
don't want him on Brokeback Mountain with you. I want him down here in the family plot. Where
Well, and like you had your chance kind of what I felt like they were kind of giving him a little bit. Cause the mom seemed nice and like knew, like, you know, kind of what they meant to each other. And then I also want to point out about the shirt in the very beginning when they're separated, because then I like said I was surprised because I was like, oh, they're already done, like where else is this movie gonna go? Like that's when I realized, oh, we're gonna start like, yeah, going through the years or whatever. But and there's that random line where he was like, I can't believe I left my shirt up on there. That mountain. And yep. I was like, and then I literally in that moment was like, okay, we're going to find, he's going to have the shirt all these years later. Like I already knew.
Yeah. Cause it was otherwise it was like random one shirt.
Yeah. It's where Andrew laughed at me. Cause he was like, oh yeah, you called that when you were watching it earlier. I was like, yep. It's like, I remembered. It's like, it's always something like that. And I was like, and to me, it just kind of takes you out of it because then it's like so obvious, like what's happening. I would have preferred them not to foreshadow it and just like not showing him wear that shirt or whatever. And then like years later, he'd be like, oh my God. You
still find it with the blood on it. Be like, oh my God, it's when we fought.
I know. Like, cause he would probably remember that. And then visually we would see that it was a shirt that he was wearing during that time. But I don't know. Mm-hmm. I guess that's you hoping the audience is going to pay that close attention, I guess.
Yeah.
But, that part I just thought, I mean, I guess probably, you know, it's like, oh, that's the sweetest part, but I was like, cheesy.
But yeah.
You know how I feel about romance. And honestly, though, that's what I was kind of like. I'm like, this isn't even, it's a romance, but it's not a romance, if that makes sense, I guess.
It is definitely a tragic one. Like a tragic romance.
Exactly. But again, I all because of Ennis. Like, yeah, I feel like he should have just ran off with freaking Jack to Jack's family farm. I mean, if his parents are chill with it, and then.
Especially after his wife found out that he was gay or that he was with Jack.
Yeah. Like basically
like it's already out in the open. Why not just go and do it?
Yeah. She's like, I know, bitch. Like, and then he was so violent to her.
Yeah.
And then again, and that was why I was like,
he was so afraid she was going to tell somebody.
Yeah. But I'm just like, this is, she did love you at one point. Like you're the one who crushed her heart. Mm-hmm. You're the one who married her knowing that you didn't, you know, like truly
love her like that.
Love her like that. Yeah. Like, it's just like, again, he doesn't take any accountability for the shitty things he personally does. Like, mm-hmm. and then he's just blaming everything on this one thing that he needs to just fucking work through. Yeah. I'm going to sound like a broken record. I fucking hate him. And and the wrong person did die. I'm like, Jake Gyllenhaal should not have died. Like, if anything, if I were going to write the fan fiction, it would be that Ennis dies. And then, but like a totally natural way, whatever. He drinks himself to death or something. Yeah. Or he gets drunk and he goes on one of his cowboy things and gets exposed or whatever. Horse. You know, yeah. Like something from his own stupidity. That's how I would want him to die. And then I want Jake Gyllenhaal to run away with that hopper guy on his daddy's farm and live happily ever after. Like,
mm-hmm. that would live his dream life.
Yeah, because I was even, Jake Gyllenhaal, he marries well. Like, and she was like a fun, like, you know, personality type that seems like that would match his, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just like, he played it smart. He married a woman like that he didn't have to take care of in that respect.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? And that's another difference between him and Ennis. Like Ennis is still trying to pretend to be that guy, you know, when it's like, you're not that guy. And you don't really have to pretend to be either. Like you can pretend to be any other type of straight guy. Why? You know what I mean? Like there's plenty of straight men out there that were perpetual bachelors that, you know, don't like want
to
be.
Yeah. You don't have to
guys.
Have a wife to pretend to be straight.
Yeah. Like
you can be a womanizer and be like, oh, I go on dates all the time. And then whatever, you're just a bachelor.
Exactly. And then no one, yeah, like because I'm like, it is the 60s, and then it even goes on to the 70s to where I'm like, this is even less and less like of a thing in that
well I mean it probably still is in Wyoming, I'm sure.
Oh no, you're probably right, but like I said, it's just that if he doesn't want to be, he doesn't have to be obvious about it, but he doesn't have to be like I said again, like trying to pretend
married
to be
with
a
children
straight married yeah dad who has to take care of a woman that he doesn't want to take care of, like,
and then it'd be even easier to just go off with him whenever you want if you're not married.
Exactly. Or like I said, or even when they do divorce and then he isn't with anyone, like now you're a divorced dad, people are gonna understand if you're not dating or getting married right. again, and you're just like taking care of your kids and stuff. In that respect, like I said, I understand the fear he has of always being found out, but like again, he doesn't need a beard all the time for that. Like
right.
like I said, after the Alma situation, like okay, you're a divorced guy now, like that, now people aren't gonna really be as suspicious necessarily. Just be the alcoholic divorced dad, like
yeah,
your cover will you never be blown.
I guess he won't have to worry about it now because after Jack died, he's gonna be living in his little trailer drinking himself to death.
Yeah, because that's kind of just how it ends basically, right?
Well, hey, yeah, because his daughter shows up to tell him she's getting married, and he said, yeah, I can go to the wedding. That's kind of how it ended.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's just basically mourning at the end of it.
You know, I did think it was funny when he went into the, she was like, I left his room just how Jack would have left it. I think he would have
it. It was so sad.
I was like, there's fucking nothing in there. What do you mean?
That house, to me, like, really captured what I feel like is the look of like what you imagine these like poor rural like houses back during that time period mm-hmm. would consist of. Like, yeah, yeah, like, oh, I left it exactly, and the peeling paint, and the, like, yeah, there's like a little metal bed and a dresser. Maybe there's like four things in there.
Yeah, I was like, there's nothing in here. What are you?
And just to end on another fun fact about that kind of stuff and the whole vibe and look of this film, it turns out that most of the crew had all referred to like this same, I think it was a photography book about Wyoming during a certain period and everything, like the, from the costume designer all the way down to a lot of the people who are working on set design and the lighting and like everything. And then they just all found out kind of after the fact, like when they were like in the middle of production where everyone's kind of, oh, referencing. And then they all, turns out they were referencing the same thing. So it is cool that basically everyone who was making this film was kind of all on board and they all had the same vision going into it.
Mm-hmm.
And that really is why it is very cohesive in how it looks, the overall tone. I mean, I think Ang Lee did do a great job. The film itself is beautiful.
The shots scenery are great. Was amazing.
The scenery, the lighting, like it is a well done film. Ignoring how much I like hated the character of Ennis, I did enjoy this movie though overall. Like it was a good movie. Like it did make me feel something. And I'm going to refer back to her quote as well, you know, basically saying that how the different readers or viewer in this case takes the story is a reflection of their own personal values, attitudes, and hangups, you know? So what I'm getting hung up on is like how poorly he was treating everyone else around him, you know, and like that kind of things with that. And I'm like, oh, that's so interesting. And they did a good job. Like it should have won Best Picture that year. Cause I had seen Crash and it sucked. So.
The only thing I didn't like, I did not like the score. I felt the music sounded very like, this is free copyright music.
I'll be honest, don't remember it. So yeah, it was very, it was not memorable. And I think that was one of the Oscars it won for.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't care for that. I didn't care for it at all.
Yeah. The music didn't like super stand out to me, but the cinematography did for sure. And the lighting, again, I thought the lighting was real nice and how they captured the whole like look of what they were trying to do with the aesthetic.
My favorite scene was at the end when he shows him thinking back when they're on Brokeback Mountain and he goes up to him and like puts his arm around him. He's like, oh, you're falling asleep, standing up like a horse.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, I was like, ugh, that just like picture of them holding him like that. I was like, ugh, it's so sweet.
I know, it's very sweet. And that's why, like I said, that's why it kind of made me where I'm like, ugh, Ennis, like, you could have just ran off with him.
I know. Why didn't you?
Like, why didn't you? Like, don't be afraid anymore. Run off with your love.
I know. Like, be brave.
Yes. It was very tragic for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I would say some of my favorite scene is when they were like tickling each other, like, and rolling around like outside of the tent when like Rand in and Randy Quaid's like watching the ball. Yeah,
I know.
But I was like, oh no, but I loved how cute and happy they looked with their they're like tickle fight.
It's like, oh, it's like young love, you know? It's
sweet. It was very sweet.
And you're like, see, Ennis can be. He can be sweet.
Oh, he can. But when literally no one else is around and he thinks, you know, but again, too, that's when I'm like, why don't y'all just go live like mountain men then together?
Exactly.
Like if you're so worried about
like you got Ennis's skills to survive off the land.
Yeah. And then Jake Gyllenhaal was like, supposedly he does really well being like the sales guy, you know, for the dad, like, you know, he's made some good money and this and that. And he said, in the very beginning, he was even willing. And like I said, the one thing that sucks about Jake that does show he's kind of shitty too, is one, he is sleeping with men and probably still sleeping with Anne Hathaway, which that is, you know, just wrong. Like,
right.
Just because you could be getting her, you know, sick or something and you know, catch an STD without her even realizing it. So I don't respect people who do that, you know. But then also that he was just like, oh, I'm ready to skip town. Her dad's willing to pay me off. Like, he just had a baby.
Right?
So in that respect, they both were kind of shitty dads in that they were both willing to just like abandon the children that they literally no one said they had to make. And then run off together. Yeah, it was a good movie. Like it, I feel like it made like good conversation. Like it brought up a lot of things, even like in my mind, where I'm like, huh, this, you know, like it was just good. It was a good film.
It was good. It was depressing.
It was, yeah. I'll be honest, I probably wouldn't watch it again because
No, I
it's
won't
just
watch it again
sad.
because of that. Yeah. It's
Yeah.
like watching Precious. Like, I watched it once
Yes.
and I was like, never again. I was like, it was so depressing. I don't ever think I can watch it again.
It's also one of those like movies when they go through like a lifetime or like, yeah, like even like this, like 20 years, like they're just so long. And after a while, it's a little harder for rewatchability sometimes on films like that. I feel like Forrest Gump is one of the few that like I could watch over and over again of where, you know, it's a drama that, you know, yeah, spans almost a lifetime kind of thing. But there's a bunch out there that I can't think of any on top of my head now, but I know there's a few that I've watched like that to where I'm like, okay, I'm good. Like,
Yeah, no, one and done.
yeah, one and done. It'll be a little harder to want to go through that epic again.
Epic is the word for it.
Yes, yeah, I would definitely call this more of a
Romance
epic.
epic, a
Yeah,
tragic
yeah.
romance epic.
A tragic epic romance.
Yes, there
Yeah.
you go. That sounds way better.
Yeah, not really a Western in that respect. I,
The only thing Western about it was just the scenery.
yes, exactly. And oh, yeah, he happens to be like Heath Ledger's character, like I said, ends up kind of being like a cowboy. But Jake Gyllenhaal's character isn't. He just lives in Texas and sells farm equipment. Like, I mean, and yeah, they go and they always meet up at the mountain, and that's about it. Yeah. So,
And he drives like 18 hours to get to him.
yeah, he does. He goes, like, he won't even leave the state, which is another crazy thing. We're gonna keep going. You keep pulling me back in because then I'm like, yeah, because Ennis even says how he's never even left the state, and like,
And why?
and it is kind of like because of his fear. Like, again, though, it's like, don't you realize too that, like, yeah, what if you did leave the state? Because he even says, like, why wouldn't, what about Texas? You know, like, and then he's, oh, you know, and he gets all pissy about it. And again, it's like, what are you so fucking afraid of at that point? Like, even moving, what if you move, people are gonna think you're gay? Like, no,
And people move to be close to, like, oh, hey, I got a buddy here. He's gonna hook me up with a job.
yeah,
That's
and
not gay.
again, you're a divorced dad. Like, people are
Yeah.
gonna
You
like
gotta
get
go where the
that.
money is.
Yeah, like I like I said, you're gonna get me talking in circles about it. But like, God damn it, Ennis.
Ennis, you couldn't even go halfway, made him drive the whole way. Now that's love.
I know, like Jake Gyllenhaal, you were
Like,
not good enough for him.
I feel like Jack definitely loved Ennis more than Ennis loved Jack.
Absolutely, I think so. Because again, Ennis just wanted to wallow, you know, in his fear, and oh, I mean, and it gets to self-pity, you know, at a certain point, like when all of the years have gone by. Yeah, but that was it, guys. That was Brokeback Mountain. I'm glad I watched it finally. Yeah, like we said, I may not watch it again, or if I do, it's just going to be a bit of time because it was very long too, and people know how we feel about long movies. And I'm already not a big tragic romance person. Like, I'm not even that much of a romance person, and then you make it sad, then I'm like, oh man, like I don't know if I want to watch this again.
You made me feel things. I don't like it.
I know, like I've watched Titanic. That was enough.
Oh God, we're gonna have to do that one eventually. It's been so
Oh
long since I've seen it.
no. It's been a little while for me too, quite a bit. So, yeah, overall, like sad love stories are a hard one for me. I just, yeah, I'm like, I don't want to be sad and like like see this, like, you know, the, what is it, the unrequited love, or yeah, or even the ones like, okay, my husband, he watches all of the like romance movies that are like the medical base, like where the one of them has cancer and is gonna die, or someone has the heart of the ex husbands of so-and-so's. I hate those. Those are like, I almost refuse to watch movies like that sometimes. Like, I just do not like them. And I think they're so incredibly sad and they like almost make me uncomfortable watching them. But like, Andrew loves them. And I'm like, no, I'd rather not.
Why does he love them?
I don't know, but there'll be a lot of movies sometimes where he's like, oh yeah, I really like that movie. And it's like a movie like that.
And you're like, well, okay.
I know. I'm like, let me make sure he's not fucking poisoning me. Oh, that's so funny. No, I just think he like if he's going to read a sad romance, I think to him, or watch it rather, I think to him, that's like the epitome of sad romance, you know, like, because it's death or like disease. Like other sad romances, it's like, oh no, they can't be together. It's usually something stupid, maybe like because death and disease is more permanent, so
it's more tragic. Yeah,
more tragic maybe.
And it's more if my parents won't allow it, well, fuck that, you know, that's not a valid
excuse. Yeah. that's true. So yeah, this will conclude after City of Angels. I probably won't be doing any tragic romances like anytime soon after.
I'm looking forward to City of Angels because it's been a long time since I've seen this.
Oh,
one.
Oh yeah, I literally hardly remember anything from it. So
I love Sarah McLachlan back then, mm-hmm. like Meg Ryan, Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, so I'll see. Yeah, what comes back to me as I'm watching it. Well, that was Brokeback Mountain. And as always, you can find us at Film Gazers on all the social medias. And we do have our link tree that you can find on our Instagram and on our RSS, like I believe on the feed as well, correct?
Yes.
Yes, there you go. Make sure you stay tuned for the rest of our tragic romance. We will be announcing March during that episode. We've been trying to think ahead, getting some stuff lined up. But remember, you know, send us a DM or just comment, you know, on some of our posts or something. If you're having an idea of a theme, or maybe you want to see a certain actor appreciation, anything like that, just let us know. So our Valentine's Day wish is for you to show us a little love. And like I just said, just give us a recommendation. We'd love to hear from you. And with that, time to hit the dusty trail.
Until next time.
Later, taters. Bada bing, bada boom.